Good evening, everyone. Smith Micro presents TGT Webcomics, a live podcast made by readers for readers as we look at comics across the internet. I'm your host, Kurt. This episode is sponsored by Webcomics What's Cooking, Feeding Families City by City. It's a 100-page full-color book, $15, gets donated to, or rather the proceeds get donated to, Feeding America and Food Banks Canada, and you can receive a limited edition large Asoza, large magnet, as well as possible poster at our store at webcomiccookbook.org. And of course, our guest on the show also just happened to submit a comic for said cookbook. We have a wonderful creator with us here today. His name is, of course, Scott King from Holiday Wars, and that's holiday-wars.com. How are you doing today, Scott?
I'm doing good, Kurt.
All right, so now we're on to a great, amazing comic. You emailed me about this comic a while back, and I've just recently gotten around to reading it. So I was definitely pleasantly surprised, and I was intrigued by the concept of it. So for those that have never actually read Holiday Wars, what is it all about?
The short answer is you have the Easter Bunny, and he is the Easter Bunny. And what he does is he kills Santa and then declares war on all the other holidays. That's the basic one-line pitch. The little bit of a longer answer is the actual story is set 16 years later, and our main character is a teenage girl named Tegan, and there's action, and at times it can be very 80s cartoonish, but the story itself is much more focused on Tegan, her character arc, and it has a little more angsty feel than just crazy action.
So then I guess my question is, what do you have against the holidays?
I grew up in a divorced family, so for me, the holidays were always just massive chaos. No matter what holiday it was, it's, you know, you're going to this person, the step parents, then the grandparents on this side, and then the step grandparents on that side. And then my dad, he has like 13 brothers and sisters. So that was always an event. So holidays themselves were just massively just nuts. On top of that, a lot of kids in the comic industry grew up reading Marvel, DC. I grew up with Rankin Bass. My favorite time of year was Christmas, and my first crossover ever was Rudolph and Frosty's Christmas in July. So for me, it makes sense that I would want to grow up and play with those characters as opposed to someone who grew up, you know, reading Spider-Man. I mean, Spider-Man would be great. That would be fun and awesome, but my dream characters are, you know, Santa and so forth.
That's actually an interesting take on it. And, yeah, sorry about your bad holiday experiences there.
Whatever. It allows me to write the angst that appears in my work.
Fair enough. You know, it's strange that you have, in the very first few pages, it's almost like a scene out of, Reservoir Dog. It's not in your face, per se, but I didn't realize that the Easter Bunny could be so... Jeez, he's just one egg short of a full basket on that one. But when it comes down to it, when I started actually going through this and actually getting into the characters, I truly didn't know what to expect. You're taking the classic holidays, or the multitude of holidays that we do have, at least in North America, and you're bringing them to life in human form. I mean, how do you get their personalities to fit their particular holiday zone?
In terms of, well, I guess for starters, we're jumping in 16 years in the war, so a lot of the holidays are dead. This was done intentionally because I want to focus more on the abstract holidays, the lesser known holidays, because by doing that meant that I could give them whatever personality I wanted. So that's why we're not really seeing, you know, 4th of July or a lot of the big holidays, because people in general already have the idea of like, well, if 4th of July was a character, he would be like, you know, Uncle Sam and blah, 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 blah. So I kind of got around that by deciding, well, you know what? I want to focus on Labor Day. I want to focus on Ask a Stupid Question Day. So I could basically make them whatever I want to make them.
I didn't even realize that there was an Ask a Stupid Question Day.
Oh, yeah. Talk Like a Pirate Day. Lots of fun little observances.
Well, I definitely know the Talk Like a Pirate Day. It's always a fun day to talk with people about that, but you have not only a mystery with, you know, the holiday spirit that is being searched for thanks to Tegan, Labor Day, and Arbor Day,
mm-hmm.
But truly, what does the holiday spirit mean to you then?
To me personally, or in terms of the story? To you
personally.
All right, let's go back to my reference of I grew up watching Rankin Bass.
Okay.
One of my favorite times of year is Christmas, and it's not Christmas Day, it's not Christmas Eve, although, of course, you know, spend it with the family and loved ones. That's very important to me. It's the holiday season that I've always loved, partially because that's when all the specials aired, you know, but it's also when you go outside, you see all the decorations, and it's that warm, fun time of year. And I guess to me, that's what the holiday spirit is. You know, it's the feeling you feel building up to those holidays. It's okay, sure, Thanksgiving can be crazy no matter who you are, but normally there's still a small moment on Thanksgiving where maybe you see your father carving the turkey, or you have a moment with, you know, a cousin you've not seen in a while and you reconnect. It's those smaller moments, the warmth, the love, and just the joy. And to me, that's what the holiday spirit means in the real world.
I like it. But this story is, I'm trying to figure out how to really place it, because you have the mysterious elements as to, you know, who's killing off the holidays. You know, the right. Easter Bunny is, of course, the main villain, and I have my suspicions, and we'll get to that later on. But I really think that, you know, these observances that are being killed off, eventually there's only going to be like a few major players left. I mean, what would be the Easter Bunny's real ploy just to be the only one left?
I guess what we got to do for the listeners in this case is basically explain a little bit more of the premise of the whole story.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's fine. The Easter Bunny. No, let's go around the other way. The whole concept behind Holiday Wars is that the characters themselves personify the holidays. So as we move through centuries and centuries and centuries, these holidays change and grow. You know, we are doing right now a flashback story where we're seeing Santa before he was Santa. He was Sinterklaas. And then eventually he became Santa. Or, for example, let's look at Easter. Easter, by our society, is, yes, you have Jesus, you have the resurrection, all that kind of stuff. But he's a fluffy bunny. He has to do with candy and hiding eggs. He's not really the holiday he used to be. You know, Easter actually started as a pagan holiday for, I believe, fertility. So in this case of the story, and in regards to the mythos of the story, Easter, in terms of the plot, was a female pagan goddess. She has now become the evil Easter Bunny in the story, and she resents that. She doesn't want to, or he doesn't want to, depending on how you're looking at it, doesn't want to keep growing and changing. The Easter Bunny wants to be its own character. He wants to be whoever he wants to be. He wants to choose his own path. He wants free will. So his motivation throughout all of this is to kind of, in a sense, preserve his own immortality and take the power away from the humans. If he's no longer just a reflection, then he can be whoever he wants to be. And that's his main goal, is he wants the holiday spirit so he can make his own choices. He wants the free will. He wants to have his own power. So his main goal of killing people off is he's just killing people off that are in his way. There are times when he clearly enjoys it, and he's a little bit of a sadist. But again, his main goal at the end of the day is just to secure his own immortality and be who he wants to be.
Let's get back to your main character with Tegan here.
Okay.
You know, classic high school girl, awkward, you know, it doesn't really have a place per se, but she wants to be her own person as well.
I was going to say that in a lot of ways, Tegan's arc mirrors the bunny's arc. The difference being is that they're making different choices as they both progress.
Well, it's hard to throw, you know, Tegan. I mean, you literally took Tegan and you threw her into the middle of this thing, and quite well done, by the way.
Thank you.
Really what it comes down to, though, I mean, Tegan's trying to find her path.
Right.
And help the holidays out in the meantime. So I think in the long run, she's going to learn about herself and her strengths, and also maybe some of her weaknesses and what she can improve upon. Will the Easter Bunny even learn from his or her past mistakes, or are we not quite there yet?
That'll all come into play at the end of Act 2 and really in Act 3. So far, the Easter Bunny has been sitting on the sidelines, and as of the current scene, once this wraps, we'll actually have him in the main action. So we'll start to get a better look of who he is and why he's doing what he's doing. as well as whether he completes his arc or doesn't complete his arc in Act 3.
You know, let's talk about some of your creators here because, some of your crew, co-workers, I should say. You know, you are the writer and creator of Holiday Wars, but
right. You
have some amazing people working with you here as well. And tell us a bit about them there.
It's basically three guys. It's Michael Odom. He is our penciler. He is from South Carolina. And he just does an amazing, amazing job with pencils. He looks over the script, draws whatever I draw or whatever I say, doesn't complain, doesn't give me any kind of crap because it's too crazy or too off the wall. And he's on time and on time and on time. In fact, before we even launched the comic last July, he had finished all of Volume 1. I mean, that's how on time and due diligent he is with his work. So he is an amazing, amazing artist, and it's been a pleasure working with him. Up next is Ataro Saeed, and he is from Mexico. And I actually worked with him on another book that is yet unannounced. And he is stepping in and doing our inks. And then finally, we just refer to him as G, and he's from Italy. And he has a really hard name to say. It's like Giuseppe Pica, but with an Italian accent. And he does an amazing job with the colors. And together, that's where Holiday Wars comes from. And I couldn't do it without them. And when we first started out, we had a whole bunch of people audition for all the separate parts or roles for the comic. And it really made a difference of, you know, Michael's pencils, but with another inker, or, you know, the inks and pencils, but with a different color. So it really is a team effort. You know, comics are a collaborative medium, and there's no way Holiday Wars would be what it is without them.
And you look through the archive, you look through the Tales of Holidays past, and you can see the level of detail in everything. I mean, I don't know how you did it, but you've gathered an amazing team together, and I hope you continue to work together in future projects for sure. You know, you have these observance holidays, and they're not very powerful.
Right.
They all have their strengths and their weaknesses. And it's the one person that I identified with, maybe because it's my geek nature or because I like technology, was, of course, Black Friday. And he's like the Sam Snead. He's trying to figure out the true crimes that are happening and who's killing what. And he has his list and, you know, pardon the cliche, but he's checking it twice. And, you know, then it came to this last page here. Now, obviously, he's probably getting close to the truth, but why was Black Friday so bent on finding what the truth really was?
It ties back into both Tegan and the Bunny's arc. If you look at the side story where he's featured, you get an idea of what his personality is really like. You know, he's very obsessed with, he's Black Friday, you know, what's the good deal, where are the bargain haunts? You know, he doesn't really have much depth. And what we're seeing as the story progresses, even when he first starts looking into all these murders, is, you know, people are skeptical, being like, you can't do that, you'll never solve this. And so in a way, it's him trying to be something he's not really is to begin with. And the whole reason to focus on him, again, is to mirror and to emphasize both Tegan and the Bunny's arc. And that's why he's the POV character for the stuff happening in Haven.
Arbor Day, I think, was one of my favorite ones in terms of just his comedic...
Wallace, yeah.
Yeah, Wallace's timing is just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
He's a chip off the old bark of his mother there. His battle against the Fool or April Fools was actually... Yeah, that must have, you know, taken a real long time to draw that battle and write it out, I'm sure.
Well, the way I handle writing is I wrote the whole story from start to finish. My background is film and media. I have a master's degree. And so for me, I write in screenplay format, which meant that I did the rough draft. I did the first draft. I did the second, third, fourth, and so on. So the writing aspect, it just all happened at once over the course of like 3 to 4 months. And it was, you know, okay, I'm going to work on this scene this day for, you know, an hour and a half. And then I got to go work on that scene. And crap, this character arc doesn't work. Or, you know what, this scene really, really doesn't work here. It doesn't really serve a character need or a plot. I'm just going to cut it completely. So in terms of individual timing for the scenes, all the writing was done at once. And then there's a lot of pages where, or I guess was a lot of pages where Michael had it and then he was normally pretty good, almost drawing a page a day. And then all of a sudden, I wouldn't get anything for a week. I'm like, man, what's going on? I hope he's okay. And then I realize, oh, he's drawing that really, really pain in the butt scene that's just going to be a, you know, a hassle to draw. For example, the Cupid scenes. He had to draw all those Cupids one by one. And it was one of those cases where I was like, man, let me email and make sure everything's okay. He's like, yeah, I'm just in Cupid hell.
Oh, yeah, that Cupid scene was entertaining. You know, they've traveled from Tegan's hometown. They're going, they reached Haven. They have a path and a quest, and that is, of course, to find the holiday spirit. You know, they just recently got to Vegas with Halloween, which, you know, that kind of threw me for a loop, but I guess that fits. But I didn't realize Halloween was so powerful in terms of
of everything. In terms of the mythos, we have what I've been referring to as the Big Six. You have Santa, Easter, Halloween, Thanksgiving, Valentine's Day, and Earth Day. And they're the most powerful of all our holidays. And so that's why Halloween was so strong compared to both Arbor Day and Labor Day.
You know, you have a great group of readers when it comes to holiday wars. I've looked through the comments every so often. You get a good batch on certain comics, and you know, ebbs and flows as comics normally do there, which is good to see. You know, one of the questions here, and I can't even pronounce the name. You know, we've also obviously been talking about the North American holidays,
right,
and their various observances. But one of the questions was. And I saw in a past comic how one of the major holidays on the Easter Bunny side was negotiating with other holidays in the Far East, or I believe right. It was. So then this begs to ask the question, you know, will we meet any holidays from other countries?
We will, but not in Volume 1. Part of the reason is that I want to deal with holidays that everyone, at least in our North American readership, knew. And I also wanted to keep the cast as small as possible so I could take the time to develop each of the characters. And even now, I mean, the cast is huge anyway, but it really isn't that big in terms of all the holidays that could be involved. So the idea for Volume 1 is just to focus on who we have now and then to move forward. We'll get a glimpse of the international holidays in Volume 2, and then I believe it's Volume 4 or 5 when we'll get our first real, real look at other guys.
So this is a long-term project. This isn't just like 3 volumes and you're done.
The idea is that basically every volume will be its own standalone story, but they'll each build on each other. So it's think of it, you know, as a movie. You know, Volume 1 is one movie. Volume 2 would be the second movie and so forth. And what I have mapped out is I have 9 volumes mapped out overall. And each one should take about 2 years to tell. So we should be doing this for a while.
Well, that's good. Mm-hmm. You know, you're really building on Volume 1. It's got me interested and intrigued with the personalities of the holidays and the battles that have been occurring. Mm-hmm. Someone asked, Kimo asked, whatever happened to the prequel novel you haven't mentioned in a while?
The prequel novel. Basically, I got the great idea that, and I already had this idea for a while, is that I wanted Holiday Wars to be more of a franchise. So the goal was eventually build a franchise branching into other media. I decided on my own that I wanted to go ahead and do a prequel novel. The main reason is I could have done an adaptation of the comic in novel form, but as a reader, I wouldn't really care about that. It's like, well, I got the comic. Why do I want to go ahead and reread it as a novel? So I decided I wanted to do something that, one, could appeal to new people, and two, that maybe a regular fan would enjoy anyway. So that's why I got the idea of the prequel novel. I went ahead and wrote the rough draft. Was everything going forward? I was just going to go ahead and self-publish, as well as go ahead and release it on like on the iPad, Kindle, and all those. And then I talked to my publisher, and he really liked the idea. And I kind of had to put the brakes on it until the first graphic novel is out. And that's just for basic marketing reasons. If we go ahead and bring in new people, new readers, we want a product that we can sell them other than just the book. If they read the book and like, oh man, I want more, we want to have a graphic novel and say, oh, we'll buy the graphic novel, find out what happens next. And so we're just kind of kind of wait until the book one's out until we move forward with the prequel novel. So we're still doing it. Everything's going well. It's just we're delaying it for marketing reasons.
You know, when it comes down to it, social media is always the key factor when it comes to marketing said product. You know, how have you marketed Holiday Wars?
We've only done light marketing. This partially goes back into the reason of we don't really want to do a whole marketing push right now when we don't have a product for people to expand upon. So whatever marketing we've done at this point has been, you know, Project Wonderful, Google Ads, things like that, which might give a bump in traffic and hopefully a few new readers, but no real big advertising. I'm also on Twitter and on Facebook and, you know, the normal kind of stuff.
And how's that? How's the response been to Holiday Wars?
I don't know. I don't know. You have the people that comment and they seem to be happy about it, but no one's really complaining. So I don't know if people like the story or if they don't like the story, or, you know, maybe they felt that scene dragged too much. Or normally on the internet, people complain a lot. And I kind of felt bad because I wanted people to complain to me like, oh man, yeah, that's right. I really should have rewrote that scene, or I really should have changed that. But I haven't had any big stuff. So I'm hoping people are enjoying it. And otherwise, I guess they're just apathetic, which might be worse than hating it.
I think it comes down to keep doing what you're doing until something really messes up. You know, with this type of project, you're obviously in it for the long haul, though. You know, you're the executive editor of Third World, so you are an extremely busy person. How do you balance the time between your comic and the business?
I think first and foremost, the way I think of myself anyways, I'm a writer. And what I mean by that is I compulsively have to write. I've talked to other people, and it's similar in the sense that you get an idea and it's in your head, and it just keeps turning and turning and turning. And the only way to get it to go away is to write it, is to put it on paper and put it on the computer and just get it out. And so if I'm not working on Holiday Wars, then it's just building and building. If I'm not working on one of my other projects, it's just building and building and driving me crazy. So the real reason to make time and is just because I have to. I have to, or I'll go crazy.
So what's your normal process? If you get an idea churning in your brain, do you write it out in point form, or do you just let the muse flow?
Let's go ahead and use Holiday Wars as an example. Mm-hmm. We were at a convention, maybe Baltimore, maybe SPX, 2007, 2008, sometime around then. And people were going by, they were picking up books, and some people weren't picking up books, and we were just joking about, you know, what people like, what's attention-grabbing, what's not. And I made a joke. I was like, man, we should put out a book about the Easter Bunny killing Santa. People would like that. And it was a throwaway joke. It wasn't serious at all. But then it started turning. A year goes by. It's turning a little bit more. It's turning a little more. I start fleshing out the mythos. Turns a little more. And finally in, it's 2011 now? 2009, I was like, damn it, I have to write this. I have to write the story. And so from that point, I went ahead and, you know, I figured out the main character. I figured out her arc. I figured out the structure of the whole thing. Again, because I come from the screenwriting background. You know, what's the act one turning point? What's the midpoint? How does this flow? And then I go ahead and write it.
That's pretty straightforward. So then where did you go to school?
I did part of my undergrad at James Madison University in Virginia. And then I finished my undergrad at Towson University in Baltimore, Maryland. I got my master's degree from American University in D.C.
So what drew you to film?
What drew me to film?
Film production.
I guess in general, ever since I was little, storytelling. I mean, I grew up with Legos. Legos were my all-time favorite toy. I had tons and tons of stories and tons of characters. And then I got to high school and they filmed Runaway Bride in my hometown. At the time, I was I editor of the paper? I guess I was just a reporter on the high school paper. And I went to the town council. I interviewed Gary Marshall and so forth. The next day, they showed up at the school asking who I was, and I was offered a job working for them, for Paramount. Okay, and from then on, it was just like, okay, let's move forward with film production and movies. And that's what I've been doing ever since.
Could you see Holiday Wars being either animated or live action?
Yeah, of course. One of the whole reasons of doing this and doing the comic is, okay, I get to go ahead and tell my story the way I want to tell it. If someone wants to pay me money and tell it their way, that's fine. Go ahead. Here are the rights. I don't care. So, yeah, I think it would work very well as either or, you know, full feature or live action or full animated. It might even work as a TV show, you know. But, again, Hollywood is Hollywood. And whether something sells or not is completely different from whether it actually gets made.
Very true. So, like, some studio could pick up the rights and then just, like, sit on it.
Yeah, I mean, I have a lot of friends in L.A., and you hear it all the time where there's a bidding war and, you know, Warner Brothers goes ahead and buys the rights to this thing, not because they want to actually make it, but just because they want to make sure Paramount doesn't make it.
When it comes down to the writing, though, obviously, you know, you've done this a long time, but at some point in time, you must get writer's block. How do you, you know, blast past that?
I kind of don't believe in writer's block. I think a lot of writer's block is poor planning. And it's, okay, you're writing and you're in the middle of the story and you just don't know where to go from there. And so in terms of writing, I don't ever actually start writing until I have a full outline and know exactly what I'm going to do. And if I do ever get to a point where I'm not feeling it or I'm not happy with it during the rough draft, because that's normally when it happens, I'll just go ahead and plow through it because I know that when I sit down and do one of the, you know, 10 or so rewrites, that scene may get cut anyway, so there's no point dwelling on it or whatever, because who knows if it'll actually be in the finished product.
Do you ever find when you're writing and then you go back, you know, you've set it aside, you go back to a story and you read through the page and you think, why the heck did I add this scene in?
It's not so much along those lines. Normally before I even start writing, when I do the outline, I have two big rules. A scene either has to move the plot forward or has to be there for character reasons. So from the start, a scene's not allowed even in the outline unless it does one of those two things. What normally happens when I rewrite is I realize, okay, it may have moved the plot forward, but not in a good way. Or maybe it had a character moment, but it's not strong enough. Or, you know what, it should be told in this scene 20 pages earlier with this other character instead. So once you finish the rough draft, it's just a lot of juggling around, moving things from here to there. And I guess you probably cut maybe like 30 to 60% of your rough draft when you go back and rewrite it. And that's a very, very normal thing with screenwriting. And that's why, too, like when I sit and write the first draft, I don't worry about typos. I don't worry about spelling. I don't sit, you know, wasting an hour trying to describe the perfect sunset, because at the end of the day, there's a good chance that scene's not going to be there anyway.
We're kind of nearing the end of the interview here. You know what's coming up. It's spoiler time.
Right.
So for, you know, let's toss in a bit of a spoiler for those that want to continue to see what truly is going to happen on Holiday Wars.
All right, we got three spoilers. The reason we're doing three spoilers is because some are for the long-term readers, some are people who just want a juicy spoiler and so forth. So the first one is pretty immediate, and I'm going to say that, and again, this is people who are listening to it like right away, this podcast, there's going to be a death that's going to happen on Wednesday and continue through Friday. You'll really see who the death is. So big death this week on Holiday Wars. The next spoiler is the title of the comic is Holiday Wars. Second word is wars. What would a war be without a battle? So, hint, hint, in Act 3, expect a massive epic battle. And then finally, our final big spoiler, this is more for the hardcore readers, because this isn't going to really come to fruition till, I guess, end of next May, next June. And that is in Volume 2, Beth, a character who shows up very, very slightly in Volume 1, is one of the main characters of Volume 2. So there you go. Those are the spoilers.
You know, I just want to thank you so much, Scott, for coming on the show. It's been a true pleasure speaking with you. And, of course, learning about your passions and your love of course, Holiday Wars. And I look forward to speaking to you in the future.